Hey everyone, welcome to the Matt Report. This is the show where we talk to real WordPress entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs in general, all walks of life, to designers, developers, marketers, bloggers, podcasters, anyone who's making a living using WordPress or has touched WordPress to make a living before. We will interview them to get their side of the story, help us with our own day-to-day operations of our business. MattReport.com, MattReport.com/subscribe if you want to join the newsletter to learn about all of these awesome shows. Today I'm joined by Brent Weaver of You Gurus. Brent, how are you?
Doing well.
Thanks for coming on to the show. Give folks a two-minute pitch, elevator pitch of what you do and who you are.
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Brent Weaver. I'm currently the CEO and co-founder of a website called YouGurus.com. Our whole premise is to help web professionals become more profitable. My background, I actually started in 1999, founded a company called Hot Press Web. That was our web and digital agency. Grew that for about, 13, 14 years. Really successful company. Outgrew my desire to continue to run the service professional business in the web agency, and decided to sell that last year. Stumbled upon a higher calling, if you will, to help other web professionals to become more profitable. So that's kind of where I'm at today. We are very close to launching our very first product for You Gurus, and just having a good time.
Awesome. So 12, 13 years running a business. And you kind of say you outgrew the desire. Let's talk about that a little bit. Was it just the client services relationship stuff that got to you, or was it just, hey, I need to move on to something else?
I always really enjoyed the client services business. For us, we kind of created our own problem, which was we actually created an information product about 4 years ago and kind of got into that business. So we had really two sides to our business that we were running. Half of it was the client services business, and half of it was actually a product. And so we started getting pulled in two different directions. We had, two completely different customer groups. We were working with small business customers, nonprofits, and then we were also working with web designers. And it just got to the point where we were kind of talking out of two sides of our mouth. We had two very distinct different customer groups, and we just made a decision to run with the Web Pro customer group. And so in doing that, we decided to kind of sell off the web agency side, focus 100% of our energy on the Web Pro. And so it wasn't really getting tired of the client services business. It was just like we were ready to focus more on this side of the shop.
Mm-hmm. How did you stumble 4 years ago onto the informational product?
Yeah, so we got part of our start in, I've built websites on pretty much every single platform out there. So we actually originally built our own CMS. I think that used to be pretty much the trend. Every web designer would, create their own way of allowing their clients to manage their content. And then we went on this decade-long journey of toying with other systems. So, open source platforms, proprietary platforms, and all that kind of stuff. And we actually had part of our success in launching an information product for technology by Adobe called Business Catalyst. And so that was actually something that was our first info product. And it was pretty successful. And it's still alive and well for the website. But we've, kind of opened that market up a little bit more. So we now focus more on the general web pro versus just the BC folks. And that's allowed us to kind of bring to the surface some of our experience with WordPress and some of the other technologies.
Yeah. Back to the client services. A lot of folks, obviously my audience being primarily WordPress, most guys, gals starting out will say, you know what, I'm going to run with WordPress. I'm a WordPress developer, or I'm a front-end designer for WordPress, so I'm only going to use WordPress. Did you use multiple platforms because you just said, here's the kind of client I want to go after and my client uses all these different platforms? Or did you just say, I'm going to be open to just capture as much business as I can?
Well, I think part of the benefit of having an agency, of having multiple people working with you, is you can kind of, in some cases, be a specialist in a certain technology, but you can also kind of work with a lot of different things. I think as an individual, it's difficult to be an expert in five different systems. But I think when you have an agency, you can absorb as much business as you want. You know, you kind of have this cookie monster mentality of like, you need so much business to keep everything going. And I think when you're a smaller shop, when you're a freelancer, or when you have maybe, you know, there's one or two of you, you know, I typically recommend that people focus in on an individual platform and a technology, because it becomes way too difficult to manage more than one piece of technology if you're a small shop. So we had the benefit of having the agency, having a team, and really our focus was more on trying to get as many customers as we could and grow a really healthy agency.
Nice. Did your team back then, did you guys use a lot of WordPress? Did you get involved with any WordPress stuff?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've definitely launched a lot of sites on the platform. I think, you know, one of the things that I tried to keep my focus on, though, was more about, like, we're in the growing customers business. So, like, for our end clients, you know, I would spend very little time actually pitching them on whatever technology they were using. And I think that was most of the premise of my article on Specky Boy, was that too many people come into a sale and they start saying, you know, I'm a WordPress expert and you should hire me because I'm going to launch you this, you know, great website on this open source technology. And then all of a sudden they wake up and they're wondering why they're having a hard time getting $1,500 or $2,000 for a project. And so, you know, I try to bring that experience to the table, that, you know, most of my agency and my selling experience had very little to do with the technology. I mean, my team had the focus of what's going to be best for this customer. But in my case, I really try to spend more of my time helping to understand what part of my project was actually going to help a company grow versus which widget we were going to use to launch a certain project.
Yep. The developers and designers out there who live and breathe WordPress are all cursing. If not, just shutting off the podcast right now. But please continue to listen. This is good stuff, and this is actually how I connected with Brent when I read his Specky Boy article about not saying WordPress. This is super, super important because, like you said, like when we go to WordCamps, we're all with our WordPress buddies. Everyone's like, hey, I cached this database and served up 4.7 million requests on this website. You know, my customers are going to love me. They don't care. They don't care. They want they want their website to work. That's it. They don't care about all the cool stuff you're doing within WordPress. Was this a reality you learned over time? A strategy you had going into the running your agency? You knew right off the bat, I'm not going to sell technology. I'm going to sell, you know, the solution.
No. So I used to sell the technology. Yep. So I used to, you know, be really excited about the demo. Yep. I used to try to like always come in and be like, oh, you guys we're going to put you in this new system and it's awesome. And it's great. And, you know, and I would spend a lot of time pitching the technology. And then at the same time, though, I was really struggling as a web designer. My agency was struggling. We were always redlining. You know, I was having a really hard time getting $4,000 or $5,000 was like, those were big projects for me. And so I kind of went on this quest. And my quest involved hiring a lot of consultants. I joined a program called EO, which is Entrepreneur Organization. I talked to a lot of entrepreneurs. I paid way too much money for way too many consultants. And then I, you know, continued to sell. And so part of that journey kind of led me to this epiphany that you know, customers aren't buying the technology. And especially if you want them to buy you, the expert, and you want them to buy you, the agency, then you really need to bring your value proposition to the table and stop relying so heavily on the technology's value proposition. You know, I think as a web designer, we love code, we love design, we love the new technology that's out there, you know, whatever the new widget, the new plugin, we get so attracted to that. But we kind of forget who's sitting in front of us. We forget about the customer and what really is going on in their world. And so when I started spending more time getting involved in their world and forgot a lot about what was happening in my web design world, that was when my projects started turning into $10,000 projects and $20,000 projects. And then, you know, we were getting $30,000 projects. And it was like, when it hit that point, I realized I wasn't talking about the technology at all. You know, one of our big customers in Denver was Breckenridge Brewery. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them, but they're a Colorado craft brew company, and they're growing like crazy. And like, I went into their office, and we got like a tour of the brewery. They told me about their whole manufacturing process, and you know, we're going around and learning about their barrel aging process and all this stuff. And like, where they're currently marketing, how they're getting their customers, where they expect their brand is moving next, how they plan to grow. I mean, we spent our entire time learning about their business, and then it was kind of like they just said, Brent, we want you to solve this problem for us, and we don't really care what you're going to use to solve that problem. And that's where the $30,000 projects come from. They don't come from going in and telling a client that you're going to work on a free WordPress theme, on a free open source system, on a $3.99 GoDaddy hosting account. You know, I mean, that's where people have the biggest problem with building value is they lead with too much of that stuff and they forget to spend time with the customer and build value.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, I think it'll come into play for my real hardcore developer listeners out there. You know, we've been involved with large projects like TechCrunch and AOL and stuff like that. And maybe at that level when you're talking about scale and there is a team of people actually evaluating the technical side of it. Will this product scale to X number of visits a month or whatever? You know, then you can bring in the technology. But for a client like that, a brewery, where you're going to be getting paid some serious bucks, especially as a growing agency, they don't care. They just want that solution that works. And you're right. Well, we get so caught up in the cool, hey, check out this dashboard of WordPress. It's great. You can create content. You can upload photos. You can do plugins. No one cares. And funny, I ask my guests at the end of every episode, you know, what book do they recommend? And all my guests have been recommending the E-Myth book, and I never read it. And I was just like, oh, it's just like another online book. I don't really care to read this. And then I started reading it, and like the very first chapter is about how you as the worker, you know, you love this stuff, right? You love this technology stuff. And then you try to just work in your business. No. Take a step back. Look at the big picture. Look at the solution that you're providing. So it's great. It's great stuff.
Well, and you'll always have those people that are very interested in the technology, or maybe you're attracting people because you're an expert in this specific technology. And I think that's a certain level. It gives you a certain level of credibility in a deal. And obviously, there's going to be a time and a place in a project where you do have to deep dive in the technology. And I'm not saying by any means that you shouldn't be an expert. It's just where that expertise gets kind of drooled on a project. And it's usually not in the first part of it. It's not when you're trying to build value for what you do. You know, there's kind of a time and a place for it. I think if I give you kind of the restaurant analogy, you know, I mean, I think we don't really care what the chef did, you know, behind the curtain, right? We don't care what ingredients they use or that kind of stuff. I mean, maybe there are some customers that do, but for the most people out there, you just care what it tastes like. You know, you care what it smells like. You care how it's presented in front of you and how it actually got to that point. You're not super interested. And there's definitely a lot of dishes. I mean, like, you know, foie gras or other stuff where it's like, you don't really want to know the details of how it was made. But, right, you know, you're more interested in the experience it gives you. And I think that that applies to our business really well. You know, yeah, you're the chef. You don't come out and just, you know, explain to your customer what all of your ingredients are and exactly how you're going to make it. You know, they're more interested in the experience and in what it tastes like than they are in, you know, every single detail about what's in it.
You just said an interesting word there, the experience. And I think a lot of folks in our field aren't thinking about the experience that the customer is experiencing when they're dealing with freelancers or an agency. What's the process like? What's it like when they finally say yes and they take on my project? How do they communicate with me? How well do they communicate? What updates are they giving me along the way? Because I'm not a tech savvy person. You know, this is the customer talking. Did you ever focus on the experience of the customer's interaction with you? Once you started finding a different voice instead of selling technology, did you kind of make it an experience? Did you shift gears in that perspective?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I would spend a lot more of my time, especially because my focus was, you know, the business development and sales side of our agency. I spent a lot more of my time thinking about what that experience was like, you know, what every single interaction actually was, how long I was spending with the customer, what we were talking about, what our agenda was supposed to be for that interaction. And in spending more time thinking about how to make those interactions really, really interesting and engaging, versus, you know, coming into them with some huge, cool technology demo. I mean, I never demoed the technology, or at least for the most part, I kind of stopped. And I spent a lot more time thinking about how I was going to connect and form a real lasting relationship with this person. One of our products that we're launching very soon on YouGurus is called the Web Design Sales Kit. And basically, it outlines my interaction model of how I would take, you know, I'd have 9 interactions with a potential customer before I would ever sign a deal with them, and basically outlines what I would do on every single one of those interactions and how I would kind of scaffold those meetings, initially spending maybe 5 or 10 minutes with a customer, and by the end of the 9 interactions, spending 2 hours with a customer. And every single one of those meetings is customer-oriented. None of them that I outline actually ever has you talking about like what you're going to do for the customer. It's all about figuring out who their customer avatar is, who their value proposition is, analyzing their market and competition, you know, figuring out who in their market is doing things well and how they could potentially position themselves to overtake them in the online space. So I spend all my time thinking about their business and really their customer versus thinking about, you know, what the heck's going on in my agency.
Yeah. That's awesome. Are those, were those first 4 or 5 that you mentioned, are those part of the 9?
Yeah, I mean, well, the first couple, I mean, one of the things that is always interesting is my second meeting that I always have with a prospective customer is always qualifying them for my business. And I think that's something that a lot of web companies don't do enough of. They just kind of like whoever knocks on their door, they just want the business so bad and they forget to say, do I really want to work with this customer? And then like somewhere halfway through a project, they wake up and they're like, man, I can't stand this person. I hate their business and they're so mean to me, you know, like, and so that's kind of what our first couple interactions are is, you know, getting to qualify them, making sure that they're somebody that your value proposition is going to fit really well with and that they're your ideal customer. And then we get into discovery, and discovery is usually around 4 meetings for me before we ever present a proposal. So a lot of guys like to have an hour-long conference call and then, you know, present some proposal to somebody, and I push that all the way to the end. So I usually don't present a proposal to somebody until I've had a lot of interactions and I feel pretty comfortable that I want to move forward with them.
So this is what it sounds like from the outside. It sounds like you're about to spend 10 to 12 hours worth of work without getting paid. How do you answer that?
Well, you know, so it's kind of funny. So what that could be possible for sure. And I mean, if you're going to sell a $20,000 deal, you can probably be pretty assured that that might happen. But something that you can actually do, because this process that I outline is you do deliver so much value, is a lot of times I would charge for my sales time. So like when we would get past the second interaction and basically I realized that they're a good potential fit for my business, I'd say, hey, look, I've got this discovery process. We're going to deep dive in your business. It's going to take about 10 hours and I'm going to charge you $1,000 for it. So you get them to commit to a smaller mini project. You're going to spend a lot of time with them, consulting with them, kind of consultative selling. And then at the end of it, you're going to give them a really good scope of work that outlines their project, their audience, their drivers, their key pains, the problems they're solving, a customer avatar. So you can charge for it. I mean, I didn't used to charge for it, but once I got really, really good at it, I actually did turn that into part of our agency's services.
That's awesome. The other thing that's so important but so difficult is picking the right business to work with, picking the right client to work with, you know, especially one that's profitable and not like, you know, when I say profitable, I don't mean that, hey, this company's making millions upon millions. It's Apple, you know, the profit margins are ridiculous. But somebody who is doing well, they're not, you know, they're not doing this, they're struggling on cash flow. And you kind of have to identify that, because in our field, it's like sometimes 30, 60, 90, 120 days, a year worth of work. You are now embarking on this hand-to-hand journey with somebody that, you know, in 6 months you're saying, okay, you owe me, you know, X amount of dollars now into the project. Any advice to those folks who are, you know, finally hitting the $20,000, $30,000 clients and how to set up payment structure? You know, any tips on that?
So I mean, as far as payment structure in general, I think, you know, it depends. I mean, if you're working kind of time and materials based where you're just getting paid by the hour and you're billing a client, whether it's through a retainer or whatever, I mean, there's that model. Or you're doing more fixed price projects. And at least in my experience, most web projects, clients like the fixed price approach. They like to see a scope of work with a very specific dollar amount versus just kind of having the open-ended retainer. Over the years, we had tried open-ended retainers a lot. It works really well with ongoing support agreements, but for upfront projects, you know, usually it's the fixed price project. And I moved to a model where we always did 50% upfront and then 25% at a midpoint milestone and then 25% upon completion. And that came out of, we used to do 50-50, and like sometimes projects would go, you know, initial estimation of schedule would be 3 months and it would turn out to be 5 or 6 months, whether it's contents being delayed or whatever the issue is. And then, you know, you're kind of saving your whole profit for the end of the project, not just profit, but really some of your overhead costs and stuff like that. And so to alleviate that cash flow crunch, you know, I would just kind of create this mid-project milestone of another 25%. So, you know, trying to keep projects obviously on schedule is a huge part about, you know, your cash flow situation remaining sane. But sometimes if you change your billing relationship a little bit, it can alleviate that.
Yeah. I that's the kind of conversation I enjoy having with folks like you and I, because that's the world that I live, is, you know, running the business and running project management, and then it's managing the cash flow and relaying to the customer or to the client, here's the reality of our business. You know, you're a brewery, so, you know, I don't know, you're building product, you're shipping it out, people are buying it, and you've got this constant wheel going. With us, it's just time. It's all we have as our resource, and the overhead of, you know, staff and you know, rent and all that stuff, utilities. And our profit comes at the end of the project. So the more you forget to review content, the more you forget to review wireframes, the more you're pushing out my business, you know. But then it's the client always wants that quick, hey, you know, can you fix this tomorrow kind of thing?
Yeah.
Well, don't forget about us, because, you know, we're still waiting to get paid from you, you know, that kind of thing.
And there's a couple things I want to say on that.
Yep.
One is you know, getting paid on time, one of the big things is setting expectations. So a really kind of bad thing I used to do was set bad expectations, or rather that's usually not setting any expectations. You just kind of like, you're so excited to get that initial check that you just forget to have the conversation with your customer around how billing works moving forward. You know, when you expect to get paid, how you expect to get paid, you know, what your policy is around people when they don't pay you. You know, like having that conversation before you ever sign on the dotted line is hugely important, to say, look, you know, I'm not a collections company. I'm not, you know, hugely wealthy. I don't have just like stacks of cash sitting in the bank. You know, I've got to pay my developers, I've got to pay my designers, I've got to keep my lights on. And when I deliver an invoice, I expect that to be paid, you know, on time. If you have a problem with something in that invoice, I expect to hear from you within 24 hours. Otherwise, you know, I expect the check to be in the mail. I don't expect net 30, I don't expect net 45 or net 90 or whatever. You know, I expect you guys to send me a check as soon as I invoice. So setting those expectations, I think, really early on in the process, and having a very serious conversation, because the time to not have that conversation is when your customer thinks that you're okay with net 30 and it's been 45 days, right? Yep. Then at that point, there's like emotion in the situation. So you want to have that conversation before you ever even get a project. And that's just part of setting really good expectations.
Yep. Do you have a war story you can share about something like that, that without naming names?
I might want to name names. No, some of the problems that we've had is when, you know, there's a deliverable, and we believe we've delivered on something, and in the customer's mind, they haven't, they don't believe we've delivered on that, and so what they did is, you know, they take the invoice and they just put it on their shelf and they don't talk to us about it, right? And so then we kind of wait for the check. We have an expectation that a check's going to be arriving any day now. And then all of a sudden, you know, we have some bills that start stacking up and are, you know, we're thinking that we're going to get this check any day now. And then finally, we don't ever have the conversation with the customer until it's net 30 or net 45. And it turns out they had an issue with part of our project deliverable, and they didn't view it as done yet. And instead of bringing that up with us, they just didn't pay their invoice.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you know, we can't pay our bills, and then it becomes a very emotional situation.
Yeah.
I probably have too many of those stories.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think has happened to me that is, you know, difficult is when you're working with larger customers. If you're working with somebody that is a major Fortune 500 or Fortune 1000 company, and they have an expectation that they always pay net 30 or net 90 or whatever. And, you know, those are people that you definitely need to set ground rules to say, look, I'm the little guy, you're the big guy. And even though you guys always pay net 90, I can't work like that. And try to get them to bend their rules for you. I didn't used to do that, but ever since I started asking companies like that to kind of bend their rules and reduce their billing profile, then usually they would go ahead and say, okay, well, we can't do, you know, due upon receipt, we could do net 45.
Right.
And that can also be a good tip.
Yeah. That's one of the things I've talked about in the past is exactly that. You know, bigger clients are great. It's a bigger paycheck. It's another zero at the end of that paycheck, but it's bringing along some of the same problems as the local mom and pop who just can't make the payment because they just don't have the money. Whereas a big Fortune company is going to pay you in 90 days because it's just the red tape and the way it works. By the time that invoice gets to floor number 23, it's already, you know, month three, and they're just putting the bill out to pay or sending the check out to pay you.
And I don't know if you're aware of this, but actually most business schools for the MBAers out there are taught to take as long as they possibly can to pay their invoices. So, you know, business schools are teaching people to go into corporate to take 90 days to pay your invoices because they want to keep their cash as long as they possibly can. So you're also fighting against that. So you know, they do create bureaucracy, but they also have like their standard operating procedure that they're taught in school is to not pay on invoices. And that can affect the freelancer in a big way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The other thing is setting that expectation so that they don't just, you know, the smaller company just doesn't shelf the invoice and say, well, I'm not really too happy, but I'm not going to have this conversation with them right now because, you know, we don't really know where to begin. So we're just not going to pay this because we don't see this as completed. Look, I mean, there's 150 channels I don't watch on Comcast, but I don't just say, "Hey, I'm not happy this month. Not going to pay my Comcast bill. See what happens." You know, I really didn't like what was on, you know, HBO 4 Spanish channel. You know, it didn't matter. So yeah, setting that expectation and making sure that we're all on the same page. Definitely, definitely. WordPress specific. Is there anything that you see? I know you're trying to get away from technology now. Is there anything shining that you see in WordPress that you think they could do a little bit better or have been doing really well in the last year or so?
I think, you know, for a lot of web companies, I mean, I think one of the problems I still see with, you know, a lot of WordPress implementations out there is the constant updating, the overhead that exists if you have a lot of WordPress sites for an agency. And I've seen some kind of cloud-based solutions and kind of some update type of methods that you can use, but I still haven't seen like the silver bullet for, you know, you've got, I mean, in our agency we had, I don't know, let's say like 300 sites that we constantly managed. And the overhead for that is, it's a lot ongoing as an agency, you know, and I think when you compare that against some other SaaS-based solutions out there, some of the, you know, the Shopify's and the BigCommerce's and those types of applications is, you know, they get the benefit of, you know, you have no overhead when it comes to technology. You know, you don't have to worry about the hosting solution and all that kind of stuff. And so I think for the agency, for the bigger customers, that's still a problem. You still hear a lot of customers complaining that their site got hacked and all that kind of stuff. And they're, you know, whoever built their website kind of went on a hiatus and just didn't do the security updates and the patches. And so I think that is still a big problem in the open source space. I'm still looking for the silver bullet for that. You know, I'm not sure if you have more experience with that, but in my experience, I've seen a lot of customers get burned in that space, and I'd love to see, you know, something a little bit more unified from the community on how to solve that problem. So that's kind of one of my big, you know, issues with it. But at the same time, you know, the platform has evolved so quickly, and it's doing some really amazing stuff when it comes to content distribution. So I think, you know, there's kind of a trade-off there.
Yeah.
But
yeah, no, you're absolutely right. What's next for you, Gurus? I see that you do a lot of video. You're doing a lot of web shows helping folks in the web professional space. What do you have going on next?
Yeah, so I mentioned it a little bit, but our first product is launching. It's a web design sales kit. It's basically, you know, my 14 years of selling web professionally, all of my experience. Well, I should say it's my later career experience that I'm teaching. I'm not teaching the early stuff, right? All of the mistakes that I made, the trials and the errors that I kind of went through. I'm not really teaching that. I'm teaching my process that I was really, you know, that was really fine tuned, and I was selling a lot of deals. So I'm teaching that over I don't know, it's probably a 6 or 7 hour course, along with a ton of other resources that I use, like pricing calculators, proposal templates, presentation tools that I use to help build value, customer avatar worksheets, and all that kind of stuff. So everything that I used in that 10 hours of sales process, we're basically gonna, you know, provide as a product, so somebody can come in and swipe their credit card and purchase that. So that's gonna be our first product, and then we've got about 15 other areas of a web practice that we're gonna be looking at over the next 12 months. So I'm not quite ready to talk about any of that stuff yet, but the sales kit's gonna be the first thing that comes out, and of course we're actually also you know, always gonna be doing a lot of blogging, a lot of video blogging. Open to questions from the community. I've got a Q&A Thursday video that we've been putting together, and that's all based on customer inquiries and feedback that we get. And then we basically answer a question every week and put some work into providing some good insight on that.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, the level of quality that you're doing with video looks great. Obviously, your setup looks great now. Are you renting out you have a studio space set up? How does that work? How do you look at the office?
Yeah, so we actually converted. We're still in the same space we were with our web agency. So we actually have been able to keep a good deal of our team from our agency business for what we're doing now. And so we actually converted our conference room area where we used to meet with clients, basically converted that into a video studio. So, you know, now we're not doing a whole lot of meeting one-on-one with people. And if we are meeting with them, there are other web professionals, and we're probably interviewing them anyway. So we basically converted half our office into a studio. So it's pretty cool.
That's tremendous. That's awesome. Very, very good. So that ends the formal interview. So we'll jump into some of the last two segments of the show, the What's in Your Toolbox segment. What piece of software or hardware do you use to run your business on a day-to-day basis, like an Evernote, Gmail, an iPad? What do you have?
Do I have to pick one?
If you got a bunch of them, throw them all together, because that's awesome.
We've got like software soup here. We use are you familiar with Podio?
I've heard of it.
All right, so Podio is our project management suite, basically. We used Basecamp for years. I love the 37 Signals products and stuff like that, but Podio is pretty nifty because it's highly customizable. So we can basically create our own kind of databases within Podio. So we manage all of our content publishing and our contributor network through Podio. We manage basically all of our operations in Podio. And then other than that, it's, you know, Google Apps to manage all of our communications and documents and stuff like that. Evernote for all of our note-taking stuff. Dropbox, we obviously move a lot of video around, so Dropbox is our solution to kind of keep all of our video stuff synced up. I'm trying to see what else is on my taskbar. And then I actually use Trello to manage my personal task lists and stuff like that. So I'm not sure if you're familiar. Ryan Carson has published a lot about how he uses Trello to manage Treehouse. And so I've been using that same methodology, and it's pretty cool and definitely very useful.
Yeah, I actually started using Trello internally because we've used Basecamp for years, and of course there's a new Basecamp. I just find that the clients still don't use it. You know, they'll log in for that first time, and it's just like you said, it's instead of selling, you know, the solution, we used to have like training classes, and then they're like, boy, what is this Basecamp all about? And then they're confusing Basecamp dashboard with WordPress dashboard. Forget it. Just to email. We'll use it internally. You know, even some of the more savvy ones, they would use it, they would post to it, but they wouldn't look at the calendar, the to-do list. I mean, they're busy running their business.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a couple quick tips on that. You know, for getting clients to adopt the project management software, which I think is, you kind of have to get them to use something, right? Because sometimes managing a project over email, if you have like 10 or 12 people that are in a project, they could becomes a little bit too overwhelming. So, you know, doing some upfront training with them on Basecamp, having them primarily use Basecamp in their email box. So you use Basecamp, but you let them leverage the email functionality where they're replying to notes and stuff like that to keep stuff organized. And the other one is to have a weekly standing meeting with your customer where you basically every week you sit down with them for an hour and it's always the same time, same place, and you have Basecamp in front of them. So even though they're primarily using email, you still show them the project management suite on a weekly basis so they know that, hey, look, if I ever was wondering what's going on with my project, I could log in and see this thing that they're showing me. But knowing that they're probably only going to use email is always a good rule of thumb.
Yeah. That's awesome. Let's jump into the lightning round, ask you a series of quick questions, and you'll have a series of quick answers. The one plugin you cannot live without. Might not have an answer for this one.
You know, there's a guy that, you know, I'm just going to say the most recent plugin that I was using. This guy is called, created a plugin called WP Preset that's actually allowed us to save a little bit of time in creating new WordPress implementations. They're super new, but basically what their plugin does is it allows you to preload all of your settings that you have from a WordPress.org implementation in about one click. So it saves about 200 clicks on the install. These guys are super new. They're just getting their product off the ground, but I had a chance to use it, and it's pretty nifty just because if you're trying to create a lot of websites quickly, it can save a huge amount of time on your projects.
Nice. Very nice. A favorite WordPress or business book?
Oh, man. I mean, I've got tons of business books that I could recommend. The most recent one that I'm actually reading, though, is the book by the Google guys, The New Digital Age, and it's been totally enthralling. So I think if anybody that's working on the internet and has anything to do with the web, I would highly recommend this book. It's not going to be that business, like, teaching you tactics book, but it's really, really inspiring so far. It just was released last week, and I mean, it talks about how the web is changing everything in more than we actually know. I mean, it gets into the revolutions that the web has started and how, you know, Twitter had a hand in all the Arab Spring stuff. I mean, they get into kind of what the next level of technology is. And I think anybody that's building on the web, we get, again, so focused on this little narrow space of what our technology is doing, but we don't really look at the big picture of what's kind of happening in the world around us and how the web and the internet's playing a huge part in that. So I definitely recommend that. I mean, if you're at all interested in kind of expanding your mind, that New Digital Age is definitely a good read.
Awesome. Awesome. A quote you live or run your business by?
A quote that I'm going to have to go with Woody Allen on that one. 80% of life is showing up. You know, I think something that I've learned is that, you know, you show up for the conferences, you show up for the client meetings. When things seem too big for you and you feel a little bit uncomfortable about them, you know, you keep showing up. If you're interested in building an app or you're interested in pursuing a certain client, you know, show up for it. You know, seek them out on LinkedIn or, you know, spend 2 hours a night trying to work on that side project app that you're doing. You know, when you have these ideas, you know, if you actually start to actually invest in them and build on them, you know, you're going to be 80% of the way there if you just do it. Yeah. And stop thinking so much about what's going to potentially happen as a result.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Before you send that first email, that first step out of the door, you already have your internal self saying, no, don't do it. Don't do it. You know, don't be a pansy, you know, sit back and, just, you know, enjoy watching Game of Thrones and don't really pursue your dreams.
Yeah, we are our own worst critics. Yep. And we have to make sure that critic doesn't stand in front of us from actually accomplishing what we want.
Yep. The best business, or career advice you ever received?
The best business or career advice. I think probably one of the things that I always probably recommend, especially for early stage companies, is, you know, to kind of divide and conquer. When our agency was really struggling, one of the problems was that I was spending a lot of my time doing sales. I was doing project management. I was doing support. I was doing, you know, design. And one of my mentors was like, you need to use some of the other people in your company or your subcontractor network to start taking on some of these roles if you ever plan to grow. You know, if you're doing everything and you're not delegating stuff out, you know, you're never going to be able to grow a really successful business. And that's really what I wanted to do. I wanted to build a company. And so he kind of convince me to start dividing and conquering. Find people that are really great at what they do and then spend more time doing what I'm really good at versus trying to do everything and have control of everything. And I think that was probably the biggest pivot in our career history, where like that year alone we ended up doubling our revenue, and the following year we doubled our revenue. And it was like I started spending more and more of my time selling, which was what I was really good at, and less of my time kind of in the weeds and stuff like that. So if you have the ability to kind of divide and conquer and really figure out what you're good at, then you know you've got much better chance of growing something successful.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. The longest a client project has taken.
Oh man, that would be still an open project.
Wow.
Started it in, I believe, 2007. Maybe 2008. Yeah, 2008. It was for I don't want to say the client, but it's still an open project. It's a Denver business. Luckily, the client actually paid us 100% up front, and they just could never get their content together. And it was just like, it's so tragic. Like the opportunity cost of them not having their online store online has just been like, I mean, they've lost like millions of dollars. They just couldn't get their inventory together. You know, we would constantly, like, I would even volunteer to come down to their business and like do the content entry themselves, because I was just like so depressed that this thing just kept going on. And the business owner, like, you know, she just could never like figure out how to like either trust us or delegate a task. I mean, she could never just figure out how to bring her business online. And you know, it's one of those that I've kind of just shoveled it under the rug as being abandoned, but it's pretty tragic. So I have to say my longest ongoing project, the clock is still ticking.
Wow. 5 years, like 5 years and going right now. That definitely takes the cake. The longest standing before you was 2 years. So.
Oh, 2 years. We've got definitely a couple projects that definitely went 2 years, but the 5 years and still counting is definitely the one that's doesn't keep me up at night anymore. But about every month or so, I usually send her an email and I'm like, hey, I'm still here.
Yeah, you just get like an autoresponder going out every month. That's awesome. Exactly. You totally crush that one. If you had to switch to another CMS, what would it be? Or in your case, what's your favorite CMS that you've worked with so far?
Favorite CMS that I've worked with. You know, it's interesting. I think, I mean, obviously there's the big players out there, but I'm always interested in kind of, you know, some of the newer stuff, the smaller stuff that's out there. You know, I know it's not a very huge CMS, but I've spent a little bit of time creating or growing a Tumblr audience. And so Tumblr is actually a very interesting, because it's so simple. Right, it's like it's a very simple, just like blogging platform, and it has a lot of different ways to publish content, both on like email and apps and like all this other stuff. And they're growing insanely fast. And for how simple of a content management system it is, I mean, obviously, if you're building website projects for customers, like you're gonna have a hard time leveraging Tumblr. But I think some of the functionality that they have built in has definitely intrigued me, just because they make it so easy to publish content on an ongoing basis. And they almost kind of have decluttered it. They don't give you a lot of power, and that helps people stay focused on the content. But I think, you know, other than that, you know, I think some of the e-commerce storefronts that are out there, I mean, Shopify is killing it these days. BigCommerce is killing it these days. I'm interested to see kind of how the SaaS proprietary and the open source systems kind of battle it out. I mean, I don't know if it's really a battle. It's really different types of technology for different things. But it'll be interesting to see which of those kind of, you know, if one overtakes the other. And that's been a fascinating conflict for the life of my agency career.
Yeah, I agree. Who should I interview next?
Who should you interview next? You know, I just had a fascinating interview actually with Andrew Wilkinson of Meta Lab. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them. They do a lot of work for like TED and Google and some of the big names, and it was truly fascinating. You know, I'm not sure if he's taken a lot of interviews, but I somehow luckily got an interview with him, and he was like super fascinating, just about his thoughts on design and how he built his company basically out of his basement. Now they're a 50-person like super company that are doing amazing design stuff for a lot of people. So you know, Andrew Wilkinson is definitely a good possibility if you can.
Tremendous. What's the one question that I didn't ask you that I should have?
I don't know, man. You've covered a lot. I think
I got them all.
You got them all. I'm trying to think here. I don't got anything new for you. Sorry. Nice.
That's all right. That's okay. I did my job. All right, so that's awesome. It's been an awesome interview, Brent. You did an amazing job. You gave us so much awesome inside info to running an agency to now growing a new product. Folks, if you want to see more of this stuff, mattreport.com/subscribe, so you can join the mailing list and you can find all these awesome interviews when they come out. Brent, where can people find you on the web and where can they say thanks?
Absolutely. So our website, ugurus.com, that's the letter U and then gurus.com. You can, of course, check us out there. We got some really cool blog posts and content kind of furthering the conversation we've been having here. And then you can always follow me on Twitter, and that's at Brent Weaver on Twitter.
Awesome. Thanks, Brent. Thanks for doing the interview.
Absolutely, Matt. My pleasure.